Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change?
Watson, welcome to another Resilient Stories podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from failure and adversity, going to live their best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and to sell. You want to learn how to tell and sell your story? Go to tawatson.com under the Million Dollar Business Pathway program tab. Click there to get yourself started. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? Joining me, I have the one and only Vivian Knebo. How you doing, Vivian?
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show. It is an honor to have you on. So I really appreciate you coming on to the show. For the folks, Vivian, who don't know you out there, you want to introduce yourself briefly to them?
Yes, I was born in Germany, and I now live in La Jolla, California, a beautiful spot right on the ocean. And I have quite a story to tell, from rubble to champagne. I was born in the rubble.
Yes, powerful, powerful. Can't wait to hear your story. If Vivian, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you as well?
I'm on the website. I have a website. It's www.viviankneble.com. And then I also am on Instagram. I'm on, you can buy my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I also have a Tumblr page, a blog page, right?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, appreciate it. It's an honor to have you on. And Vivian, as you know, the purpose of our podcast is to bring amazing people like you on and kind of talk to us about your story and how you kind of overcame some of the odds there as well. So I'm going to start with my first question. What's been the biggest obstacle you've had to overcome personally or professionally in your life?
Well, I think the biggest obstacle was when I hit my low point. That was when I was 17 years old, after I tried to make the best out of my life and try to get ahead. It was so hard, where I felt that all my efforts were in vain. Wow. And I just felt a complete emptiness and decided I wanted to end my life. So I heard somewhere that when you start a motor and close a garage door, that the carbon monoxide would render you unconscious. And that's exactly what I did.
Wow. Wow.
But I'm here. I was saved by a little six-year-old girl. She must have been around 6 years old. All of a sudden, as I waited for my end, this little girl stood in front of me, and I remember her short cropped hair and asking me, what are you doing? And I immediately turned off the motor, opened the garage door, and told her meekly I was going to wash my car.
Wow.
And then I thought, where did she come from? You know, and then I realized there was a side door. It was a garage in a duplex.
Wow.
In a duplex. So it was a small garage. And there was a side door, which I was not aware of. And she must have come in through that side door. So I think I'm here for a mission. Absolutely. I honestly believe I suffered so much, and I feel that I would like to help others that are prone to despair and suffering.
Yes.
In telling my story and what to do, you know, what drives you, what
powerful.
Find the right thing to drive you.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. So talk to us about some of the things you suffered growing up as a kid in Germany.
Well, I had such low self-esteem because I was born 1943 in the epicenter of Nazi Germany, that was Berlin. And I was born illegitimate, but my mother was such a beautiful soul. She was fiercely devoted to my sister and myself, and had to struggle a lot to get us through this. So I was born illegitimate, number one. I was deemed stateless because I had no father. Of course, everybody has a father, but in Germany, the law was such that the child gets the nationality of the father. Since I had no father, since I was illegitimate, they considered me stateless. So with other words, I had no country. On top of it, being illegitimate in Nazi Germany, you know, and also considered a foreigner was, I mean, that was, I would not be sitting here if the Nazis would have stayed in power.
Wow.
I would not be sitting here, believe me. And so I grew up among rubble, destruction, because Berlin was mostly destroyed. Mm-hmm. And my mother struggled hard to keep us afloat. She worked in the black market, striking deals, anything to, you know, to keep us afloat. And sold brassieres, things just to make it have a little income. And we were always hungry and cold. And I remember at the age of 6 years old, I took a little pail to a newly rebuilt department store, which I remember still as a small, very small child in ruins. There was a crashed airplane in there. I just saw this huge hole and looked at it as a little child. Well, they rebuilt that up department store, which was once a very fancy department store before the war. And I went in there with that little pail. They had a grocery department, and I asked for scraps for my cat to put some dignity into this situation. And they cruelly, actually, the man behind the counter cruelly would ask me, is it really for your cat? Because I kept showing up. Is it really for your cat? I mean, that's like rubbing it in. That alone should teach people, be kind and compassionate.
Yes.
You know, don't put someone down even more. So I had low self-esteem, and I went also to the open air markets and got fish crates, wooden fish crates, so my mother could cook or keep us warm. And that is how we took them home, the scraps. My mother would make soup for us, and we survived that way. And then I entered the first grade. I did not go to kindergarten like a lot of the children did. I did not have the kindergarten, but I remember holding my notebook, holding it close to my chest and thinking, I'm going to do really well, because I always wanted to do so well.
Yes.
And so I had a rude awakening. I could not follow the concept of the teachers. I needed more time. And at that time, they had no understanding for that. You know, there was either sink or swim, you know, that was the thing. And so I fell behind and could not follow. And it was sheer torture. It was sheer torture. I kind of looked at the clock and willed the time away. And the others were already so far advanced. And in the end of that school year, the teacher condemned me to my mother, I'm dumb. Can you imagine that? That's another strike. And it was another blow. So my self-esteem was very low. Yeah. And my mother reconnected with an old schoolmate when I was about 7, who just returned from Siberia. He'd been in prison for 5 years in Siberia, one of the few that came back. You know, many people starved there. And I think the reason why he survived because he was a custom tailor and he mended the uniforms so they could use him, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was his... saved him, but he moved in with us, and my mother said, now we have a father. And I was so delighted to have a father. I called him Papa right away. And then things changed, though. After he lived with us for I think about half a year or so, I can't exactly remember, he started drinking on weekends, and they would have these brutal verbal fights, my mother sometimes even physical, where I vowed to myself, you know, when I grow up and I get married, I'm going to have a life with harmony. That'll never be. And I did just that. I manifested my destiny.
Yes.
I can honestly say I manifested my destiny. Well, eventually, when I was 13, they never got married. When I was 13, they finally got married because they wanted to immigrate to Canada in search of a better life, like so many immigrants. And So that's, my mother had to get married then, and he went on ahead. And then we, when we left, he went first. And then when we followed him, he picked us up and brought us to an apartment that he had rented, which was like a barrack-like looking apartment. But still, once we opened the door, we were so glad we had running water, we had heat. Yes. And I remember in the kitchen, there was a big tray with pineapple, bananas, and chocolates, and apples. And I thought I died and went to heaven. You know, that was the biggest deal. And so we were happy to be in Canada. But the first winter, we went hungry again. We suffered again because he could not find work as a tailor. And he did menial jobs here and there, but then he could not find any more work, and we ran out of food. And my mother didn't, she was a survivor. So she took me by the hand and she said, we went into a church, just randomly, you know, picked a church, went in there and explained our plight to the priest. And the priest, with our broken English, well, my broken English, my mother hardly spoke any English. And the priest listened and sympathetically handed us $35. So my mother went out and got flour and rice, you know, the staples that would last us longer. And so we survived this first winter. And when I was turned 14, I asked my mother, I want to help. Let me go to work. And she had to request a special permit because of that child labor law.
Sure.
And so she got this permit, and I got it. I thought a dream job for a dentist who wanted to train me as a dental assistant. Uh-huh. So I was developed. I already stepped into my beauty at that time. I looked older than I was. I started out with having to clean the whole office from top to bottom, and then by noon I had a little white nurse's hat and a white uniform, and I looked like a regular little nurse.
Sure.
And I wanted to learn, and he showed me many things. And then one day, one of his friends came in while the doctor was not in, and he sexually abused me.
Wow.
And I was so innocent and was so distraught. I didn't know what to do. And I thought, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to lose my job. And then how uncomfortable and how embarrassing it was for me to tell him, you know, what he did and so on. So I was struggling back and forth. Am I going to tell him? I'm not going to tell him. So I decided to tell him because I was afraid he might come back and do it again.
Sure.
So he was totally on my side, my boss. And he said, oh, you know, that man will never come in here again. But I left that workplace. My mother said, you cannot stay there. So I left the workplace and started to work for the 10 cent store, Woolworth.
Wow.
I worked behind the counter, lunch counter, and made sandwiches with care and heart, and always wanted to please. I actually enjoyed being around people and serving, you know, so I did that. And, but I realized I wanted to improve my station in life and thought I can't do this forever. And I went to night school and learned typing and stenography, and then applied for a job at Volkswagen Sales and Service. You know, that iconic German car.
Uh-huh.
And I got the job immediately. Everything was easy at that time. You know, I went there during my lunch hour and they hired me immediately.
Wow.
So I got the job, and I thought, I was looking forward to that, finally in an office job. And I became increasingly unhappy because there was no camaraderie. I was working in one great big room with women over twice my age. There was no connection, no camaraderie, and I fell into deep depression.
Wow.
And that's when I was 17. I had already purchased a small used car that I had, rented a garage, and that's how that happened when I wanted to end my life.
Wow.
So when that little girl saved me, though, I clung to a glimmer of hope and set a goal. You know, just kept on doing what I did. And pretty soon thereafter, their position was opened at Volkswagen downstairs in the service department, where the customer service department. And I got that position as a secretary for the service manager. And I saw all the customers coming in, and I liked the life, you know, finally life.
Yes.
And when I was 20, a man walked in, he bought a Porsche and he became my husband.
Really?
And from then on, the pendulum swung from despair and sadness to joy, hope, and happiness. Yeah. And I've just thrived ever since. And I can honestly say I'm an accomplished woman.
Yes.
I'm very wealthy within.
Yes.
With through my wisdom, all the hurt, all the challenges that I had gone through, have fortified me.
Vivian, you know, they've fortified me. Your story is absolutely amazing. I really thank you for being transparent and honest about that as well. You know, Vivian, what would you say that's been the biggest lesson you have learned over the course of your life about overcoming obstacles?
I think never to give up hope.
Yes.
Never give up hope. Persevere and yes. Stay determined.
Yes.
You know, that is, you can have all the education in the world. If you don't persevere and stay determined, you're not going to get anywhere. You know, I'm like a badger. I dig in and this right. is what I want. And I set goals and I write them down. So I see my goals and I'm definitely a self-made woman, self-made, but I had very little formal schooling, but I went through the school of life. And I think life experiences, you know, say more than, you know, theories.
Yes.
They're more convincing than theories, I would say. Don't you think? I mean, you've gone through it yourself.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. Those experiences in life and those are the things, I think your story is going to be a blessing to a lot of folks out there who are listening.
I hope so. That's what I want people to, even when you're down, really down, you know, always cling to hope. Don't give up hope and don't have a dream. Don't give up a dream.
That's right.
Because if you have no hope, there's nothing to live for. And you need to have a dream, set a goal, imagine that, you know?
Yeah. Folks,
and don't
there.
Expect it to come overnight either.
That's right. Folks, if you're listening, but hopefully you're inspired by Vivian's story. You got to go out there and get her book. Vivian, what's the name of your book again?
The name of the book is From Rubble to Champagne,
oh.
Rising from the Ashes of War-Torn Berlin to a Life of Grace, Beauty, and Gratitude. It's all about gratitude. I have a profound sense of gratitude.
Yeah.
Here's my book. I don't know that it will show. Does it show?
Yes, yes, we see it.
See, there's the rubble here,
champagne.
The
yes.
destruction, and this is me now, the champagne. I call that the champagne.
I love it. I love it. And Vivian, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I guess to get a hold of me, it would be on my website, wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
I'd say website. A website okay. on my website, or if they want to buy my book at Amazon, or Barnes & Noble, and I'm okay. sure a few other places. No.
That is awesome. Vivian, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, sharing your story today. Appreciate you big time. Folks out there, if you're an overcomer, you have a story, amazing story, want to hear from you at TAWatson.com. Subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, rate it, share with your folks on social media. And everyone else out there, stay encouraged and be sure to support Vivian Knievel and her great story. And you're going to be inspired. So thank you guys for joining us. God bless. Peace.
Yours truly, Dr. Watson.